When I was a small boy, still fond of reading stories, I remember to have read of a princess while hunting in the forest with her retinue, came across an anthill with two bright dots. She was intrigued as to how the anthill could have sparkling dots. So she took a small piercing grass blade and pierced into the sparkling holes. Immediately it appears there was a flow of blood, and the pretty princess was bewildered. Her followers rushed forward, and it was discovered that what she had thought to be an anthill was in fact a sage had built their hill around that body, which was immobile. And what were the sparkling dots? Were his eyes, that the sage, in keeping with the traditions of the times, cursed that princess, and it took a large, pretty amount of bother and trouble to get out of the curse is another story which need not concern us today. I enjoyed it as a story, but it had always intrigued me whether it was not a poetical imagination. I left it there. Years later, when I was studying the history books somewhere in the school, higher secondary school, I read that when the Britishers first came to India, and as a measure of consolidating their power in India, they started laying down railroads, digging the earth for hundreds of miles. They came across sitting figures, human figures, in a sitting position. They were not dead, but obviously they were there, buried. I remember the previous reading of the anthill man, and it tickled me further to know that men could live for hundreds of years in a particular state. I remember to have asked someone whether these were fairy tales. They said no, they are historical records. And particularly during the days of the Indian Mutiny in 1857, number of such discoveries have been recorded. There have been reports in recent years of saints, sages, found to be sitting in a still position for months together, without food, without water. Some of these, little more showy of them, of these yogis, have given public performances even as near as 100 miles from Pondicherry, asking to be buried alive for 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, and issued instructions how the closed pit was to be opened, how little bit of butter or ghee was to be rubbed in the center of the head slowly by the disciples, and how they were to be helped back into active consciousness. The government authorities, the police, doctors, all have attended these functions and have testified to the reality, to the actuality of the phenomena. There is, again, about 300 or 400 miles from Madras, there is a famous center of spiritual potency, where a spiritual leader with a large religious following closed his earthly career wanting to be buried alive in a prepared tomb, and after he sat down, took his position, went into deep meditation, bricks were laid and the tomb was closed. And he said his ministry, though it was physically over, the spiritual ministry will last for another 300 years. It is in the government records that when, some 50 years or so later, the government of Madras wanted to acquire the adjoining land, the people raised a hue and cry, and the governor of the, which was then a province, he visited that place, and in dream, when he visited, he did see a venerable figure walking out of the tomb, coming to him and telling him, "Yes, this land belongs to this temple, this monastery. Do not disturb it." He dropped all proceedings, came back and had it recorded in the government papers that as a result of this encounter, it was decided to drop the proposal to acquire the lands. Now here are a number of instances of what is called the phenomena of yogic trance, what we in Sanskrit and in Sanskrit-derived languages call samadhi. It is a natural culmination of the yoga of knowledge which we have been considering so long. To practice and to acclimatize oneself to the state of the indrawing of one's consciousness or awareness more and more away from external preoccupations and converge all the faculties of consciousness to one object, maybe inwards or upwards. The destination is to release the consciousness, to focus the consciousness on a point, on a level, deeper or higher level, till it is completely lost to its surroundings. Necessarily, in that context, it means a withdrawal from the world. And after all, the aim of the traditional yoga of knowledge is to reject the world as if not a falsehood, an inferior order of reality. Even in the traditional yoga of love, of devotion, this increasing concentration of consciousness inward, away from contact with the external things, is cultivated in order to prepare the soul to be entirely occupied with the object of its adoration, so that it may not only lose itself in the presence, in the touch of the beloved, but be nothing more than a receptacle for the bliss that flows from the divine. In either case, the human consciousness is withdrawn, directed elsewhere, away from the world. Surely, this cannot be the role of trance in a yoga that we have been pursuing, the integral yoga. Here, one goes into the condition of trance not to draw away from the world, but to acquire a state of consciousness akin to the divine consciousness, the highest possible for the human system, and turn to the world from that poise, to think, to feel, and to act in that newly acquired and acclimatized consciousness. Where are these grades of consciousness that the mind has to traverse, that the mind has to tread? This is a legitimate question. It is a matter that is being growingly discovered in modern psychology and parapsychology. But taken as an axiomatic truth in the Indian psychology, that what man is normally, of what he is conscious normally of, is only a fringe of his being. He lives only fragmentarily. There are grades after grades, levels after levels of consciousness which loom over his little physical consciousness. From all sides, there is behind his externally extrovert consciousness, there is a large subliminal consciousness which extends itself into superconscient heights, which goes down into the subconscious depths. There is, besides, the environmental consciousness, what we may call the circumconscient, surrounding him. Of all the entire consciousness that is massed in and around man, he lives only on a little fragment. The Indian psychologists speak of four states of consciousness: the waking state, the dream state, the sleep state, and the transcendent. Corresponding to each level of consciousness, there is the waking self, the dream self, the sleep self, the supreme, the fourth, or the transcendent. All these, they take care to point out, are not four different persons, four different entities, but it is the one transcendent self that poises itself on these four levels. to draw the experience from each level of existence. The range of each successive level is wider, larger than the previous one. We understand very well that when you speak of waking state, it means a state of awareness when we are conscious of all the external things, mostly through our senses or the sense-based mental operations. We also understand that when we speak of the dream state, it means when we are withdrawn from active occupation with the world, outside world, we are turned inward and luxuriate in unfettered movement of our subtler senses. The physical senses are asleep, but the subtler senses behind them are active. We expand, physical distances melt away. We enter into another order of existence where things are faster, where physical barriers break down, but all the while they have a resemblance to the state of things on the physical plane. The sleep state. By sleep state, these psychologists of yoga mean a dreamless sleep, where there is no movement of dream, but absolute blank. When you come out of it, you know you existed, but you can't describe, you can't say what happened. This is called sushupta, deep, dreamless sleep. The self of this dreamless sleep state is the causal self, the self of the causal body. He is the Gnostic self. This causal body in which a person exists in the deep sleep state is the sheath of the Gnostic soul. Beyond is the transcendent, the absolute. I forgot to make an observation. When we speak of the sleep self, it is not right to understand it to mean a self that is asleep. In fact, they take care to use other adjectives, saying that he is prajna, the wise one, the luminous one, the lord of knowledge. He's wide awake, more awake than any of the selves below. But it is called sleep because that is the only word to denote an order of things of which our waking or even our dream self cannot take cognizance. It is possible to enter into trance on any of these levels. It is possible for a man to confine himself to the waking state and get into trance, get into samadhi, losing contact with all the rest, but not going higher. This is a point that I want all of you to understand. It is possible to go into samadhi on the dream level. It is also possible, but more difficult, to go into samadhi in the sushupti state. What happens when one practices this yoga of Patanjali, or the Raja Yoga as it is called, or the Hatha Yoga, which we will discuss in our next meeting, that one is confined to the physical level by concentration, by force of will. One withdraws the outgoing faculties, holds them together, and cultivates the habit of keeping them in one position. One need not believe in God. One need not want to reach God even. It is a matter of existence. It's a matter of consciousness, awareness. Once you withdraw the various faculties of consciousness inward, away and away from the external thing, awareness, they get fixed. Even in that state, when the whole thing is drawn and centered in one position, the whole of the breath gets centered there. It is an automatic and a spontaneous operation, that as the consciousness gets centered in narrower and narrower place, the breath also narrows itself and it holds. It is a yogic technique of joining the breath with the stream of consciousness, with the line of consciousness, and holding it. At that time, all the physical operations of the body may be suspended, and for want of sustenance from the life force which is indrawn with the consciousness, the heartbeats may appear to stop, the pulse may appear to stop, there may be no movement, and as there is no movement, there is no wear and tear of the body. Life continues in its subtle form, in its narrowed circle within. Outwardly, the person is dead. No food is necessary. No air is necessary. Because in that state, one does not need to breathe to live. Life exists by itself. There is no interchange. One is like in a sealed chamber, and this is the condition. One need not be spiritual. One need not believe in divine. It is a matter of technique, practice, and endurance. It is a siddhi, an accomplishment that is aimed in Hatha Yoga, where the technique is only of asanas, to accustom the body to immobile states, pranayama, the regulation and control of breath, to bring it into a desired movement, functioning. This would explain to you the phenomena that you may be reading in journals and papers of yogis living for hundreds of years, lost into their trance meditation. It is a siddhi which, however, has no significance from the point of view of spiritual evolution, which has no meaning for humanity. How does it help? If I acquire a higher state of consciousness and use it to shut myself in, to live long, to be away from all trouble, how does it help the rest? It is an individual siddhi which is deprecated in the higher yogic tradition. There is then, going into trance on the dream level. One does not actually sleep. But when one withdraws from the physical state, the next stage is where the subtler being, the subtler levels of consciousness unfold themselves. The subtler senses begin to operate. If one chooses, one can become aware even of the physical universe around through the subtler senses. One can hear, one can even see through the subtle eye what is going on if one wants. One becomes aware of grades of existence which are larger and higher than the physical. Various planes reveal their contents, and if one is so minded, one goes to explore them, or one shuts one's eye to them. It is to be noted that the condition of physical dream and the condition of a trance dream are totally different from each other. In the normal dream that we have, in the normal state of sleep, it is all a jumble of delayed reactions to touches and impacts in the day-to-day life, reactions of the senses which are half awake or three-quarter awake to impacts from outside, imaginations, subconscious impressions, all these coming up in a jumble. This is what happens, an unregulated, confusing movement which tires. Of course, there are types of dreams which are premonitory, dreams which are pleasant, but normally, for a man in ignorance, the state of dream is this. In the yogic trance, in the trance dream, however, there is a complete regulation of the movement of the subtle senses. Regulated imagination, regulated perception. One sees, one gets the thoughts, one hears the sounds, but all in a regulated and a controlled manner. It is here, in the course of becoming conscious of levels of life which are higher than the physical, that one comes across, and if one chooses, one can take cognizance of what is called the subtle etheric atmosphere, where all that has happened, all that is happening, and what is to happen are found recorded. This is a continuous process that goes on in the universe. But the contents of the subtle ether, the slate, subtle etheric slate, are shut in due to the gross sediments or layers of the physical ether. In the dream state of trance, one opens, the eye is opened to what is recorded on that film of subtle ether, which is called in Sanskrit Chidakash, the sky of consciousness. Sri Aurobindo describes graphically how what is recorded concerns not only the past, not only the present, but even the future. It is the memory of the future. How does the memory of the future come? He answers that to that eye of knowledge, the past, the present, and the future are all laid, mapped out. It takes time for things to precipitate on earth, but on that level, they are all mapped out. If one has the eye to see, the perception to catch, one can know anything. It is a ray of this knowledge that comes in our waking states now and then. We call it clairaudience, clairvoyance. After this state of dream level is exhausted, the yogin withdraws still inwards, and there he enters into a state of which he can only report that I was in a state of bliss, but I do not know further. Because the human apparatus of recording as it is not yet equipped, is not yet developed enough to keep memory, to elongate the knowledge of those contents of that consciousness in the waking state. Still deeper, this, as I said, is the status of the Gnostic self in dreamless sleep, dreamless state. Still deeper, one becomes aware of the self of bliss, where even in that dream trance state, one is flooded with bliss. You may ask, is that all? No. Above the bliss self, beyond the bliss self, there is the self of pure, sheer existence. Even the word bliss does not do justice to that state, where bliss is only one of the vibrations. It is a state of pure bliss, the state of existence, the state of the absolute. It is difficult for man to connect his waking state with all these states of trance. But by practice, in the measure in which the psychic being opens and learns to grow into the deeper and higher states of consciousness and hold the contents of that consciousness in its state, it is possible to forge a bridge between the outer state of consciousness and the deeper and still deeper states of trance. These states of trance do not have the same significance, the same role to play in the integral yoga as they have in the traditional yoga. They are meant to connect the waking consciousness to the different and higher levels of existence, normalize those states through peak periods of meditation called trance, establish links between the different levels of consciousness, so that all those levels of consciousness which are realized could be gradually and increasingly embodied in the waking condition and utilized to manifest the divine who embodies himself in these several states of consciousness. Possible, it is, one can arrive at these states of consciousness without going into trance. by opening oneself, keeping oneself receptive to the descent of the higher and higher states of consciousness, keeping always link with the external life. Without getting lost into the depths of trance, it is possible to receive in oneself first the reflections, then by identity, the very body of this higher consciousness, and normalize it in oneself, so that in due time one can function simultaneously on so many levels of consciousness. All the three or four selves can operate in the integral man. For that, after all, that is the significance of the integral man.
In the formative stages of the psychic being, being developed, brought forth, how does what you've said relate to its coming forward? Does it come forward first and then make these bridges, or do the bridges encourage the psychic being to come forward?
As the psychic being forms itself and takes possession of your being more and more, it grows in stature, and in the very growth of this stature, points of contact are established at the next higher levels of consciousness. And it is through these points of contact that the higher levels of consciousness get entry into the waking condition of the seeker. One does not have to make a conscious effort as in the traditional yogic trance, but one has to keep vigilant and expand oneself as according to the demands of the psychic being. The consciousness grows, man has to cooperate in the expansion of the rule of the psychic being. In this yoga, it is a speciality that once the psychic being is awake, that takes charge of this sadhana. And the tact lies in attuning oneself, the rest of the nature, to the awakened psychic being. The psychic, after all, is a spark of God, of the divine. And as it awakens, it links the individual to the divine above or behind. The psychic being, you may say, forges the links by itself.
Records that are called to the Akasha, Akashic records. The question as to divine lila, or the play, in which you have often said there is the possibility of many lines of realization. But in these records, is there an ultimate line that one sees, or are there also the possibilities that you see?
What are normally called Akashic records in the theosophical literature and the kind of literature associated with Alice Bailey and others, they are transcripts, supposed transcripts on the vital levels, on the surface of the subtler existence. They are not the true records of the Chitakash. These are misguiding writings or scripts on subtle physical or vital levels, which mostly misguide man. They are not of truth origin. That is why 90% of the cases they misguide. It's only, I think 2 days ago, that I had to go through a book called The Aquarian Gospel of Jesus Christ. The whole book of 200 pages is compiled from Akashic records by someone in America between 4 to 6 in the morning. That is supposed to be the best period to understand these things. Worked over 6 months, and all kinds of details are there. Christ is supposed to have spent 18 years in India, Tibet, Orissa, Kashmir. Dialogues are recorded. Dialogues are quite interesting, but certainly they can't be authentic. They lack that ring. They are dramatic enough, interesting. As you read, you enjoy it, but they can't. They don't have those vibrations. Now, it is very offensive to tell those people that we don't believe in these things. Volumes after volumes are flooding the market. I have read how the early theosophists have received these writings. They have recorded, I have received the diary leaves of, read the diary leaves of Leadbitter, read of Blavatsky. But the whole thing is a wild mixture. Thing is, they are not the purer strata of consciousness, cosmic consciousness on which the records are placed or things get recorded, but interferences on the intermediate levels by entities which amuse themselves.
Future is also there.
Yes.
Is the future there to the extent of many possibilities, such as one's choice?
There is a realm where only possibilities are portrayed. There is a realm where what is determined, that is there. It has to be worked out. After all these possibilities, struggle, it is that thing that will be worked out. It is not very comforting or encouraging human effort to know that 90% of our life, spiritual or material, is in the realm of possibilities. That the thing is going to manifest, that we are going to realize, that is a certainty. That is a certainty. But the time factor, that is in the realm of possibilities. Whether I realize God in my present life, or in another life, that is in the realm of possibilities. Certainty is that once I have set on the path, I am going to realize it. Because unless I was ready for it, unless I was meant for it, I would not be put on the path. About
inventions.
Copyrights
for inventions often appear exactly at the same time, because one in America and one in Africa. And apparently it seems that there's like a
Yes, theoretically it is possible. It is possible. Because all that we invent here is there prearranged on a higher plane. What happens normally, that when that formation descends in the earth atmosphere, whoever is open to it, in whichever country, he receives it and he expresses it in the language that is natural to him, in the way that is normal to him. That is how you will find that the same inventions or the same ideas have been expressed or brought into existence in different countries at the same time. It is possible for one to go in consciousness to those levels, seize those things, and if one is developed, to bring it consciously and embody it on earth. It is possible. But normally, a person who has that developed consciousness to be able to do it does not do it, because he knows that the earth conditions are not yet ready for that formation to take birth here. Because when the conditions are ready, it descends by itself, if it is intended to take part, to form a part of the manifestation. There was an effort from his end which stimulated those higher thing formations, designs and that sort of things to precipitate themselves. Largely, they came from above, but he was ready. His mind, by working, had formed the grooves in which the thing could flow. In fact, he was a being who was projected on earth precisely to precipitate those formations in earth existence. He was not an evolutionary being like others. Is called a vibhuti, an emanation.
From what plane would he be a projection or an emanation?
From the plane where the typal plane of those things which he brought out. There is a plane, world of art, typal world of art, typal world of music, typal world of these scientific things, where these things are pre-envisaged and sorted out. They can be anywhere between the subtle physical and the mental. These are all parts of the manifested universe. Before they are manifested in the physical plane, they are all marshaled and kept ready on those higher planes. So, these certain poets, musicians, they are emanations from the music world. Maybe vital music, subtle physical, I can't say. But certainly, not what you think, what others think, that it is from a divine plane or a truth plane. No. They all belong to certain intermediate planes of existence. where these movements of art, music and all these, they have been in a state of certain perfection. In Indian scriptures we call the world of Gandharvas. They are the gods of harmony, music, beauty. Oh, it is the vital world of beauty. There is a vital world of music. It can move masses. It can inspire one the right way or in the wrong way. There is the vital world of poetry, just as there is a mental world of poetry. Want to ask something?
Yes. If a collective or a group of artists wanted to draw down the highest possible consciousness, would there be a way to work towards that?
Yes. If one aspires to the truth, to the highest divine that one has got fixed in his aspiration, to reveal itself in the appropriate or the highest art forms that are to manifest the truth, that truth chooses forms from the art world and precipitates them. Whether we receive them without deforming them is another question. Usually our own ideas, our own formations, if they are not my own or your own, from the collective, all these interfere. There is also a possibility. Between that world and our physical world, there are other mischievous beings. They also may interfere, dilute. So, there are so many intervening possibilities. Between the release of the right forms from that plane and the reception of them here on earth. But it is possible to move the highest, to reveal the right forms of art, of music, of architecture, which can render the truth, the highest truth to man. It is possible. In the course of creation, perfect worlds are there, what here in the course, the typal worlds, where art is raised to its highest potency, music is developed to its highest. They form the stuff, they form the substance for the creative spirit to work with. If the power that comes in answer to our aspiration is from the truth plane, the stuff that is chosen and precipitated on earth will be imbued with that truth. If we are content to receive guidance from an intermediate power which pleases us or our sense of aesthesis, it will be that order of art creation. Yeah. Yeah. The personality continues, but not in the sense of a physical personality. Personality need not be always physical. The physical is a front. Behind the physical, there are so many other personalities. So, there is a personality that continues to preside and guide, and it is very concrete. It may not be physical. It may not be physically perceptible, but it is there in the subtle form. The personality continues. Things are not dissolved into an impersonality. She had, even when she was here in the body, she had both. Sri Aurobindo had explained, in a different context though, that as a personality, she channelizes the grace. You can receive grace by approaching her in her personality, personal form. But in her impersonal form, in her impersonal way, she is the universal power, consciousness, which works according to the laws of the universe. There, the frame of grace is not there, law. But in a personal aspect, when you approach her in a personal aspect, you bring into operation the action of grace. So that meant she had simultaneously two levels of functioning, the personal and the impersonal. Her leaving the physical body does not make any difference to this truth of her manifestation. She is and she will continue to be a personalized divinity for the work that she has undertaken. Each one will see in the form that is familiar to him or in which he conceives of the mother. The same embodiment reveals itself to the perceiving eye according to its previous formation. Those who have seen mother physically, always she will always reveal herself in that form. Maybe a different luminosity and others, but essentially it will be the same form. No, they will recognize her. That it is she. The form will be recognizable.